You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Today, in a fifth grade class at Citizens of the World Charter School in historic Filipino town, it's time for social studies.
So I want us to think, what do we know about the relationship with indigenous tribes and the land?
They were more like peaceful with the land. They wouldn't like destroy it.
The kids are learning about the history of this land before the Europeans arrived. The teacher is Brittany Jefferson.
So the seventh generation principle is a principle that many indigenous communities and societies uphold. You are to treat the land and the resources in a way so that seven generations after you will be able to also live off of the land.
And this isn't just a lesson about the past. Pretty quickly, students like Jack shift the conversation to how we're doing upholding this principle right now.
Because of global warming and the amount of gas that we use and the animals that we kill and all the trash that we're putting in the ocean, it's like we're just taking everything.
LAUSD has plans to invest more in climate literacy lessons like this one to better prepare kids for the changing world they're living in. But what's the best way to do that? To introduce a huge problem they've inherited without scaring them, when we adults haven't managed to solve the crisis ourselves. KCRW's Kaylee Wells picks up the story from here.
Without prompting, these students can rattle off facts and opinions about deforestation and corporate greed and rising tides and warming temperatures and the unequal plight of poorer countries. Remember, this is fifth grade. Most of them are 10 years old. With climate literacy can come climate anxiety.
Well, I don't like hearing about it. Like, I know I need to learn about it and stuff, but it's, like, really sad because a lot of big, like, companies and stuff, they don't care about it.
I feel like we take it a bit more seriously than, like, some adults because we actually care about, like, having this earth, like, and not having it turn into just like a wasteland. And like, eventually this is just gonna end up in a way that kills us all.
How do they feel having all this information in their heads?
Scared.
Yeah,
so it's as scary how much like humans are just destroying the world.
It makes me feel like overwhelmed because it's like if I was in the next generation, I would just cry and eat ice cream all day.
These things all kind of compound together to form a generation that is experiencing much higher levels of anxiety than earlier generations.
David Bond is a social worker. He's a trauma specialist and he's a director for behavioral health at Blue Shield of California. He says adults aren't having to grapple with the effects of climate change the same way as their children.
There's also a sense of, well, somebody else is going to figure that out. For young people, they are the ones who have to figure this out. And also there's a sense of people of older generations aren't doing enough to mitigate the harm that we have done to the environment. So there's a sense of anger and frustration at older generations as well.
Jefferson says she's seen that in her students.
They don't have faith in the people powerful enough to make systemic changes. And so they're just like, yeah, the world is burning. And so like, we're going to burn eventually. And so that's something that I am working to combat.
LAUSD administrators believe one way to combat that anxiety is talking about it more in the classroom. This year, the district passed a resolution committing more resources to climate literacy. Lucy Garcia was one of the people spearheading that effort. She's a volunteer with the L.A. chapter of Al Gore's nationwide environmental group, the Climate Reality Project. And she says ignoring the problem doesn't make the kids' anxiety go away.
That's where the trauma is worsened. So the most important thing is to be able to have them see that we are working on it, that we need their help, than to ignore it.
But Bond says the internet can cause its own problems because while social media encourages more active participation from its users, it also becomes a place for teenagers to air their stress and anxiety publicly. And that only makes doom scrolling worse.
Sometimes by taking a break and stepping back from it to take care of yourself, kind of like on an airplane when you got to put your own oxygen mask on before you can do anything to help someone else, you got to take care of yourself Because if you wear yourself out, not only are you doing yourself a disservice, but you're really not helping the issues that you're seeking to impact change upon.
Because what does help kids is seeing where climate solutions are working. That's what Blossom Shore says. On top of her full-time job at Van Nuys Middle School, she gives climate talks to students as well.
I love the fact that they're still very idealistic. And so they just love that they can have an impact in the choices that they're making.
When Shores gives the climate talk to a class of Van Nuys Middle School sixth graders, it starts out with some bleak statistics.
This is one that breaks my heart. We're now at risk for losing up to 50% of all land-based species in this century.
She talks about fossil fuels and rising sea levels and worsening heat waves. One student, who is very excited and chatty, knowing there's a radio reporter in the room, is quick to comment on a graph about the annual increase in wildfires.
Off the charts.
Yes, now it's off the charts.
I literally just said, you can say it's off the charts.
It's now off the charts.
But when Shores gets to the back half of the presentation, when she starts talking about the exponential growth of wind and solar energy, the same student, Tyler, is more than ready to jump on the optimism bandwagon.
Global wind energy capacity is now what?
Off the charts!
So that's what's been happening with the way they build solar panels. This is, again, what is it?
Off the charts!
Shore says that's the kind of reaction she's looking for.
Yes, we want them to understand the gravity of it, but we don't want them to have dystopian, you know, reality fears on a day-in basis. It's so important for them to feel empowered that they can educate each other on these issues.
And by the end, some of the students did feel empowered.
I felt hopeful because I don't want Earth to get more worse.
Because now there's a chance and the global warming doesn't get worse.
It's important because we have like a really big impact on the world and our actions can change like very seriously.
Thank you, Gwen. Is there a reason why it's important to you personally?
Because I want to live.
That's a good reason. Sorry, it's not really funny, but it's a good reason.
And it's a reason that many of her classmates share. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
All right, still ahead, the adults are voting and races in the OC that you may have missed, or maybe those races that aren't getting a whole lot of coverage. Gustavo Arellano is in with KCRW's Orange County Line when we're back after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More of Greater LA Now on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. There's a hotly contested mayoral election tomorrow, if you haven't heard. Not just in LA, but in Anaheim, down in the OC. Anaheim's previous mayor resigned back in May after the FBI revealed it's investigating his involvement in the sale of Angel Stadium. That seat is vacant right now, but four candidates are vying to fill it. Also, there's a Costa Mesa initiative that may transform that city. And school board elections in Placentia, Yorba Linda, where critical race theory and sex ed are on the ballot. Gustavo Arellano is here with us, columnist obviously for the LA Times, but a regular here at KCRW's Greater LA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
All right, so let's head to Anaheim first. The four candidates running for mayor couldn't be more different down there. There's one big issue looming in this race, obviously, corruption. So what's happening with this race, and what impact has the previous mayor's resignation had? This is Harry Sidhu.
Yeah, so Sununu was supposed to be up for re-election until, of course, he resigned in the wake of an FBI corruption investigation, which alleges that there's a, quote, cabal that runs Anaheim. And one of those members of that supposed cabal, City Council member Trevor O'Neill, he's running against Ashley Aiken. Ashley ran in 2018, lost, a Democrat, the daughter of Wiley Aiken, a legend in Democratic circles. A third opponent, Lori Galloway, she was a council member back in the aughts, and she's trying to run for mayor again. And then the fourth candidate, Dick Lopez, he's not anyone in political circles, just a regular citizen who's running. And this is an interesting election because it was supposed to be just a two-person race between Harry and Ashley. Of course, Harry resigned. With Lori Galloway coming in, people are afraid it's going to split the Democratic vote, and then Trevor will become mayor of Anaheim.
The campaign has been an interesting one. You had a Republican group, the Lincoln Club, praising one Democrat and then criticizing another, all the while endorsing a Republican candidate. What's going on, and what's going on with party identification down there?
Oh, well, it's the Lincoln Club. They're all about the skullduggery in Orange County. They're one of the oldest PACs or PACs in the United States, and it's always been about helping out conservative candidates, but also trying to torpedo liberal ones. So, of course, they are completely against Ashley Aiken. They don't want Democrats in office, but if they could try to pull away Democratic votes from Ashley and put them into Lori's camp, of course they're going to do that.
Anaheim has a lot of the same housing availability, you know, affordability issues that L.A. does. What are these candidates proposing to do?
Well, with Trevor's case, it's always been about, you know, having development. Development's good, but not necessarily affordable housing. Ashley has been all about affordable housing. And Lori Galloway has always been involved in helping out abused women through her nonprofit, the Eli Home. So when it comes for all of them, it's really a question of what's going to be the future of Anaheim. Is it going to be someplace that's going to be a little bit more equitable, or is it a place where, you know, it's a playground for the rest of the world, then the city of Anaheim gets some of the trickle of those billions of dollars that taxpayers pay every year?
Let's stay on the subject of housing. Supporters in Costa Mesa of Measure K say it would possibly lead to more housing getting built there. Opponents say not so fast. What is Measure K exactly?
This one's interesting because it's a slight repudiation of Measure Y, which Costa Mesa voters approved 6 years ago to basically put any big development to a vote before the entire city. And this was done when it was a more conservative city council who didn't want... There's this fear of the LA-fication of Orange County, meaning we still believe in those single-family homes with the lawns. We don't want condos. We don't want big apartments or anything. So now, though, the Costa Mesa City Council's majority Democrat and a pretty progressive majority at that. So they're not trying to pull it completely back, but they're saying, look, like, this is complete NIMBYism. We cannot afford that as a modern city. We need more apartments to be able to house everyone. So let's do that. And so some of these projects, it's still going to be up for a public hearing, but it doesn't have to go up for a public vote.
Finally, let's talk about the Placentia Yorba Linda School Board, which earlier this year banned critical race theory from being taught in its schools. Obviously, a lot of folks on the left say it's a non-issue, that it's a drummed-up issue. Two members of the board who voted against the ban are now facing challengers. It has gotten contentious, hasn't it, over there?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is Placentia Yorba Linda Unified School District. So up in northeast Orange County, the working class city of Placentia, the wealthier city of Yorba Linda. But this is also happening in school boards across Orange County, where you do have people who are more conservative, who do believe that wokeism has gone too far and that, you know, in their minds that children should not be learning about sex education or gender, period. They are really making a concerted effort to take over these boards. And in Orange County, the school boards have been a battleground for decades. I mean, the Orange County Department of Education tried to ban a biography of Martin Luther King Jr. in the late 60s because the board members thought he was a communist. And thankfully, that didn't happen, but that has not stopped successive boards of education or school districts from trying such stuff. The 90s, it was, you know, religious groups pushing for it. Now, in this case, it's a mishmash of everything from the conservative movement. And a lot of people are afraid that if they get into office, that you're not going to be able to learn ethnic studies anymore or say much of anything other than reading, writing, and arithmetic.
And this is a carbon copy of things happening at school boards all across the country, right? Not just in Orange County.
Oh, yeah. And as Orange goes, so goes the rest of the United States. Of course, there's so many elections to talk about. We've talked a lot about them here in Orange County Lion, but those I thought were the three that have not gotten enough attention, so we gave them attention right now.
Tomorrow's election day. If you haven't voted yet at one of the voting centers throughout Southern California, do so. Wrap it up by tomorrow. You can go to our website for more information on elections throughout the region, kcrw.com/election. Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times, one of our regulars, of course, here at GLA. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias and vote.
Coming up, votes are being tallied for an election in North Hollywood. A group of strippers at an adult club there are deciding whether they should organize as employees. We're going to have a report from the scene and how it's all going right after this. Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW and some different election news. Or really no news, at least for now. For nearly 8 months, dancers at Star Garden have been on the picket line in North Hollywood protesting what they describe as unfair labor practices. It's a story that we've been covering for the last few months. The strippers there have been voting the past few days on whether to organize as union members, a part of Actors Equity. Well, those votes got counted today, but now there's a glitch as to whether the votes can go forward without court intervention. And KCRW's Juliana Mayo is on the scene at the union headquarters in NoHo with the latest. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, Steve.
You went down there to hear the news of whether the strippers would unionize. Hours later, there is no resolution. Why?
Yeah, we were all told at 2 o'clock that there was going to be an unveiling of boats. And until about 3 o'clock, we didn't hear anything. So it was just a bunch of people mingling around. At 3, they let us know that of the 16 votes, 15 were fine, one had been voided, and all of them were being contested by Star Garden. Basically, they're saying the strippers weren't really employees, they were contractors, and so this vote is invalid.
All right, Star Garden, of course, the adult club where they work. How are the strippers reacting to the news? Are they calling this a win, Juliana, even though nothing was officially determined?
You know, it was a mixed reaction at first. It was really quiet. And then we heard from Velveeta, one of the dancers.
Yeah. This is 16 yes votes. Yeah. Whatever that one vote was, this is a win. Yeah. Period. We know how we voted. And we knew that this was coming from these employers. The history of strip club owners wanting to erase our dignity, erase our existence, not treat us like workers. So it's an emotional thing as well, but we won. We won.
Well, what about the union that would be representing them? This is Actors Equity. How are they reacting to this vote?
Their president, Kate Schindel, flew out from New York for the vote today, and she had a lot to say about it.
I'm not sure I've ever seen such a display of solidarity from people who have had to do so much more than I had to do in order to join a union, which is basically fill out a piece of paper and write a check. And it's incredibly energizing.
Juliana, what are the workplace issues the strippers have been most concerned about? There's a reason why they took to the picket lines. There's a reason why they wanted this vote. Why?
Yeah, Steve, they were really concerned with safety issues, which I think are common in lots of strip clubs. They had issues with rowdy customers, and there wasn't a clear line of command for how to deal with being harassed, being touched. And then there were other things like OSHA violations, you know, ripped up carpet that they would trip over, and even a rodent infestation, which they kind of famously put on display when they did their OSHA violation-themed protest outside Star Garden a while back.
Obviously, they've been picketing for a long time. You mentioned, you know, one of them dressed up for the OSHA violations, and they've been donning all kinds of costumes during that time of the picketing. How have they been making ends meet if they've been on the picket lines and not working?
There's been a real show of solidarity with these women and strippers across the country. Like, Strippers United was here today to represent strippers as well and show their support. But I talked to one woman, Lilith, who kind of explained how she was getting by.
We relied a lot on our community, and we started an action fund for people to donate to so that we could kind of sustain ourselves while we were out of work. But it's definitely been a hard financial hit, and one that we feel is worth it. We think the sacrifice is absolutely worth what this will do for the industry, but it's definitely been hard financially.
And what about the people who did cross the picket line, Juliana?
You know, that was interesting. Lilith said that they were upset with customers who crossed the picket line, but she had some other thoughts for the women who kept working at Star Garden.
There's a lot of mixed feelings around it because we do understand, like, you need to pay your bills, and that is a completely valid thing, but also it does ultimately affect our negotiating power, and it is the reason that we were outside on the sidewalk for so long. But we hope that when we are back in the club that we can create an environment that's good for all of us.
If it's determined, Juliana, that they can organize, however long that may take, how do the dancers, how do the strippers think that being a part of this union will help them?
I mean, I think they see it as having backup, right? They have somebody who can make sure that their safety issues are recognized and dealt with. And they have a support that they don't feel that they have now working for Star Garden.
I know you reached out to the management at the club and they didn't get back to you. We have reported on this story before. They never gave us a comment, even going back months. Have they said anything about what the vote might mean for the club going forward? Obviously, they're contesting this, right?
Right. So it's been very difficult for anyone to get any kind of word from the owners themselves. Their lawyers did put out a statement saying that they don't believe it's clear that the election is legitimate, which is basically going back to the idea that these dancers were never employees of the club, according to them, and that they were actually contractors and thus not accorded any of these rights that the National Labor Relations Board is saying that they do have.
Yeah, we've seen that kind of fight in other industries across the country as well, employee versus contract labor. KCRW's Juliana Mayo reporting from the Actors Equity Association in North Hollywood. Juliana, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, that's all the time we have for this evening. Tomorrow is election. Can you believe it? Election day is tomorrow. And you've been voting, perhaps, all over Southern California for the past few days. Maybe you got your ballot in. Maybe you've gone to the voting center. Whatever it may be, we're going to talk tomorrow about how voting will go, electorally and logistically, and from a security standpoint as well, with a lot of threats against people across the Southland who perhaps are getting these threats from people who aren't happy with the way the election process goes. We'll talk more about that tomorrow on Greater LA. And how about counting those votes? How long is it going to take to get those votes in because of security measures, because of how long it'll take to get those votes actually in to the registrar's office? We'll have that tomorrow, GLA, right here on KCRW. You can get the latest on this midterm election, by the way, all the stories that we've done and our other shows too, like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Press Play, at our website, kcrw.com/election. And while you're there, tell us how you're doing. And of course, we'd be honored if you subscribe to the podcast too at kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Nihar Patel, Phil Richards, John Meek, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all help piece the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thank you for your time and your ears. Have a great night.